Welcome to the Mindset Evolution podcast, powered by Self-Recoding, world-class consulting and coaching services that you can access at selfrecoding.com. Self-Recoding is a unique blend of neuro-healing modalities that will empower you to reach your full potential. Join thousands of others who have experienced rapid results in their journey of personal growth. Now enjoy our show where we bring you tools for a powerful mind with your hosts, Kathy Tate and Daisy Papp.
And hello everybody and welcome back to another episode of the Mindset Evolution podcast, the show that gives you tools for a powerful mind. I'm Kathy Tate, your host from Down Under. With me as always, Daisy Papp from America. Hi, Daisy.
Hello to Australia. Hello, Kathy. Good to see you.
Guess what, Daisy? Guess what?
Guess what?
It's episode 200. Woohoo!
Yes. Wow. 200. Can you imagine? Wow.
So amazing. Number 200. What a milestone. I'm so proud of us. Yeah. Well done.
Well done. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. This really.
Yes.
Beautiful.
So I've got a juicy one today.
Yes.
Something serious. We need to talk about the future. And I feel like this topic could be the very thing that helps bring us forward. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about a renaissance of self-thinkers.
Beautiful. Yes. Let's speak about a renaissance of self-thinkers.
Yes.
Absolutely, yes.
So first, let's start with what's a self-thinker. I'm going to let you do that one.
Well, I think that I'm a self-thinker at this very moment. Huh? I think that a self-thinker is someone who not solely follows trends, fashion, habits, because everyone is doing it, now I do it, but someone who evaluates for themselves and thinks for themselves and can distinguish between good and bad. Not right and wrong, but good and bad. And that then based on their own evaluation, that then they make a decision. So that is my short version of a self-thinker. Someone then who can, based on their own thoughts, can connect dots in a different way than the masses do, for example.
Now, it's interesting that you say distinguish between good and bad, but not right and wrong.
Yeah.
Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
Can you explain that for us?
I do believe, I think, me as a self-thinker, that's my perception of humans I'm interacting with and humans I observe, large groups, communities, and small groups and small communities, that humans have an innate, and there are studies, by the way, on that, when they do experiments with babies, that humans can distinguish between good and bad. Right and wrong is something that is oftentimes artificial. For example, it is wrong to say hello to a lady when you're in this part of the world, but it's wrong to say not hello to a lady at another part of the world. These are cultural and geographical differences, so that is maybe the right and wrong. But the good and bad, I have serious faith and I truly believe that humans do know how to distinguish between good and bad.
Okay, that's interesting. I think I agree with that, that we do have this innate ability to know if something is good or bad. I think that our bodies tell us things like that if we listen. I might call it instinct or your sixth sense, or I don't think it matters what the label is. Mm. I think that it's true that human beings have that ability, if they listen to themselves, to get a feeling or a little voice or whatever it is for you. So that's interesting. And so let's talk about the word renaissance, because it's a big, long, flash word, isn't it? And in my world, in my culture, it's something from the distant past when there was a wave of culture and art that came about, and it was called a renaissance of something. But when I was educated, it talked about something hundreds of years ago, nothing in the present or anywhere near our generation. Mm-hmm, so I'm interested to get your take on it, because you come from Europe, which is where it happened, and you probably know a lot more about how it happened and the effect it had and what the word means in terms of how we're using it now?
Well, thank you for having such a thought about me. I'm not a living dictionary. Nevertheless, I can share what it means to me. The Renaissance to me includes to bring the spotlight on something beautiful, artistic, humane also, and bring it back into fashion or bring the spotlight onto it or bring something into the spotlight. Now, the Renaissance also to me means that we bring it back. So let's make it a fashion again. And again, I'm not Britannica or any other dictionary. But I'm happy to look it up, what it says here. Renaissance, definition. A rebirth or revival. The humanistic revival of classical art, architecture, literature, and learning that originated in Italy in the 14th century and later spread throughout Europe. The period of this revival, roughly the 14th through the 16th century, marking the transition from medieval to modern times. Now, I add into that that it is a reawakening of these values and seeing the beauty in art. Oftentimes, people, even in a gallery or in a museum, and it appears to me that they went there because it was on their bucket list or on the visitors list in that city, and then they just rushed through it without really having a look and allowing maybe that piece of art to impact them in one way or the other through the five senses, yeah? Oh, how it feels, or to really have a look or keep looking at it. And now when we go to Renaissance of self-thinkers, I do believe that in the past, many people were much more relying on being a self-thinker. I think that the media plays a big role in this.
I think this is very interesting because if you think about what you've just said about the original Renaissance in the, I think you said the 14th to the 17th century.
16th.
And rushing through a museum without really appreciating it. If you think about the time or the period that we're talking about in the 14th century, what life was actually like in medieval times and how important this Renaissance was. Because in my understanding is what it did is it brought us out of the dark. Mm-hmm.
Good point.
And it showed us the possibilities of the light, of culture, of a new way of thinking. And I think that is the key that I would like to apply to this topic because I feel like the world right now is ready for a new way of thinking, a new dawn, a new age, a revival of values. And a revival of what we are calling self-thinkers, which could also be called critical thinking, a way or an understanding of how to think for yourself and not just be told what to think, which has been happening for, I would say, a long time now in the modern world, at least two or three generations. They've been programming us, think like this, believe this, do this. These are the accepted things. Whichever society or community you come from, there has been that effect in recent years on all of us in whatever country or culture we live in. I see it happening regardless of where people are.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to bring this topic up today, because I know that we both feel like it is time to help people reawaken these skills and reawaken themselves to the fact that they have choices. They have free will. We have control over what happens to us in a way that maybe has been a little bit forgotten. And this skill of self-thinking is really the starting point for that.
I had a very lovely conversation earlier today with a teacher, and she told me that in class, when there is a student who says, well, do it for me, or they ask their schoolmate, can you do it for me? And she stops them. She says, no, when you don't learn it, then you will be depending on others. When you learn it, you will be able to do it yourself. And the same thing is when we look at learning and the school system. I'd like to just gently touch on that aspect of self-thinking. It is not really wanted to raise self-thinkers. in the school system that we currently have in the majority of areas where I'm aware of what's happening in the school systems or education systems. They want, based on the curriculum, no, this is the way how you do it, and this is the way how it was done, and this is the way how it's taught, and this is the curriculum, and this is how it's be done, period. And I really appreciate when there are a few educators that I'm very fortunate to have met in my life, that they allowed, okay, so this is one solution. How else can we get to the solution? What other ways are there? Because when we broaden that, then we can choose. I like to think about when we only have two choices, then we are in a dilemma. When we only have one, then we are forced. But when we have a handful of choices, then we have a selection. And I think that, again, may inspire self-thinking more. But in order for being a self-thinker, we also need courage. Many people are really conditioned in many countries, in some countries more than in other places around the world, where it is just not wanted that you think for yourself. No, no, we are going to think for you. We make the decisions for you. And that's very dangerous, as I personally have observed over the past 4 years, especially around the globe. Now, we want to show, I think, and inspire people that it's possible to be a self-thinker again. I'm not asking be a self-thinker and come up with a drawing and with an invention how to skyrocket the next rocket into the sky. That's not what I mean, but smaller decisions and then larger decisions, easier decisions, and then maybe some more impactful decisions. But when we are able as humans to reevaluate that actually it's a good thing when I can choose and I do not solely follow orders or trends or fashion or the to-dos, because everyone is doing this now. How come you don't do that? No, only because everyone is doing that does not necessarily mean that it's also good and opportune for me to do it, not even to mention my child.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Very recently, I've got to say, watching people on social media platforms jump on the current thing. I've never seen anything like this before in my life. And I don't know if it's an American thing to do this because I don't see it so much here. But I guess the platform, I'm not going to name the platform, but the platform is a majority of Americans on there. And it was very interesting to see them very rapidly in succession. The current thing kept changing, but everyone would change their pictures on their profile and they would change the way they spoke in their posts to jump on board this current thing. And it was very strange to me, this sudden conformity that just spread seemingly like wildfire and so fast, and then it would change again so fast. And it did puzzle me quite a lot, because that is what I would say the opposite of critical thinking.
Yes. I think you said a very good word here. I really appreciate you brought that in, conformity. That's wanted, I think. And that's my personal observation and my thoughts based on what I'm observing and how I evaluate it. I'm not saying that is the fact. This is my opinion, and I've really expressed that. Now, changing the profile pictures, because now it is about this case, then it's about that, I'm against this, I'm for that. And it is really like the sensationalism, like it sped up over the years, over the decades already. We can really look back when we go back to 2000, 2001, and then what happened afterwards, it got faster and faster. And when one topic or one crisis is no longer as sensational and the fear-mongering lessens, so people are not that scared anymore, they got used to it, then they need to throw in another one. When I refer to they, I speak randomly about media, like the news, and the reporters that are following orders. And then there's a huge conformity also in journalism visible. And there's a big pressure behind it, because when they don't report on specific things, then they don't get their articles, for example, published. So again, I think it goes a little bit back to divide and conquer. And some can divide better than others, and then they conquer. And when we are self-thinkers and we can see through that tactic, then it will no longer have an impact on us. We will be the observers, but no longer the sufferer or the victim of such, I would even call it psychological operation.
Yeah. And actually, I meant to say a few minutes ago when you spoke about the education system, and I wanted to give you an example right here in Australia right now. One of our states has had a 200% increase in homeschooling, and the powers that be in our country are so concerned about that. They're trying to force the state school curriculum onto homeschoolers so they are not allowed to teach anything outside that curriculum. Now, that just shows to me that they're scared that we are teaching children to be self-thinkers, because that's another way of ensuring conformity, isn't it?
Are you a self-thinker right now? I think you are. So self-thinking also to me means that I'm courageous enough to have my own thoughts, allow them to develop, and ask questions about thoughts that are maybe not mine. And are they still true? Like when we look at culture, some things are beautiful in culture. Most things are beautiful in culture. When I look at culture and history, especially from Europe, where it's very rich, and also here in the US, it's very rich. Also, when we go in Australia and look at the Aborigines, it's very rich, but it's not very public. Why? Maybe there are some things in there that are not so opportune towards those or for those who are running the government. I don't know. I'm just thinking for myself out loud in this particular case. The homeschooling that you mentioned, that there are many homeschooling groups and communities that I'm aware of, and it's almost like mushrooms. You see them grow all over the place. It's like here, and then they pop up there. And in Europe, I see it in many countries. And here in the US, I see it in several states happening. And there are different requirements, how you then can test the child, because there are these, what it's called, state assessment tests and such that children have to go through. But I don't think that they will be able to oversee what else the child is learning, because maybe the child is learning how to grow food or how to cook or how to change a tire or how to make a tax return, how to maybe do some carpentry. Or repair some piece of clothing. And that is something that's out of their control. And I think that is a very good thing. To me, it's a very good sign that there are so many parents seeing that the school system is just not opportune anymore in this age and time. And what's in the past, we cannot change anymore. But now we can act based on our own self-thinking and evaluate what's best for my child and what's best for me as a parent. Can I live with the consequences if I drop my child off into the, I sometimes call the schools, not all schools, because they're private schools and charter schools that have a different curriculum, but I also call many schools parking garage. It's like you just drop your car off and then you pick it up later on. And that's what people, many parents do to their children. They drop it off and they expect that the child will be polished and educated and tuned. And it's a huge thing that we as self-thinking parents also remember the consequences with our doing or lack of doing. When we drop our child off and then we pick it up and then we expect the school to educate them in social skills, in family values and such, it's not going to happen. So we as parents also have a huge responsibility. And I understand that many of the younger parents now today also grew up with their parents working full time, maybe two or three jobs to make a living. And the children also already, those who are now the young parents, lacked actually what is so important when it comes to family togetherness and the human values. So everyone can only bring to the table what they have. When I have empty hands, then I bring the empty hands. And when I have skills, I bring the skills. When I have thoughts and ideas or fascinating maybe patterns in my head and innovations, then I bring that to the table. And everyone can only bring what's in them and what they either learned, acquired, or received in one way or the other.
That's an interesting point, because I guess the generation having children now were the product of working parents.
Yeah.
And most of that was not through choice, it was through necessity. I myself was a sole parent who worked, and my son was in childcare very young. And that has affected a whole generation of parents and children, and is now affecting another generation because they are now parents. So it's an interesting conversation. And I think the goal here in today's episode is to remind people why self-thinking is so important. And I want to throw in right before we finished what the world looks like if we don't have a renaissance of self-thinkers. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen, Daisy? What do you see if we don't encourage this and have it happen?
That's a challenge for me because I usually don't think these thoughts because I have huge faith in humanity. And especially since last weekend, I had a doctor friend of mine visiting from the mainland and we had a fire on the beach and the neighbor had their kids here and they are young adults. They're 26 and 30 years old. And we had such a deep conversation about life and self-thinking. And they were so stern in, no, we are not going to participate in that. No, we're out of that. No, we don't do this in the system and so forth. So I have huge faith in that. So especially after last weekend's conversation there at night, way too late, but it was very worthwhile. And when we don't inspire others to be self-thinkers based on us being self-thinkers, then that's hypocrisy. And then people will turn away from that. So authenticity, again, is the currency here. It's the ticket. Mm-hmm. So when we authentically live and lead by example as self-thinkers and inspire others, we don't force them. No one likes to be forced. But hey, do you really think that this is opportune for you? Have you thought of another option? When you only have one option, you don't have a choice. But did you think maybe of another option? Yes, maybe, or no, I cannot even think about it. And then we can inspire, not forcing them, because in the moment when we want to shape them, then again, we disable them from growing into self-thinker. So it's a freedom. It's free and not free, like cost-free. It costs a lot of energy and internal work, effort. To be a self-thinker and remain a self-thinker. And it remains practice, or it requires practice. And also, I think the inspiration can be so beautiful. When I see someone who is connecting the dots in a way and shape and form that I never thought of, I'm fascinated by it. I listened to a doctor, he was interviewed, and he is very big on audio and how audio impacts us and resonance and binaural beats. And so very interesting. I was fascinated. I thought, wow, how he's connecting the things. And I listened to it twice and it was an hour and a half long because I was really into that. It fascinated me. Now, in order to be self-thinkers even more and easier, we must have knowledge about several things that requires an open-mindedness to a degree. That doesn't mean that I let everything in. No, it means that I look at this, I look at that, I look at that and this and so many different offerings. And then I choose and select what's to my liking right now. And then I later on can always add something more or I can let go of something that I picked previously. So we want to educate ourselves and that is also part of self-thinking. And the renaissance of self-thinking, I think, is just around the corner because I see it in many areas, in many interactions that I have, and I have faith that is absolutely happening. And I see it. I see it.
Yeah, I was being a bit of a devil's advocate there, and I see it too. And I have to say, especially in my son's generation, mm-hmm. our sons are very close to the same age, around 30. Mine has started a family, yours, I'm sure, will do that one of these days. And I do see them pulling back from the system, wanting to do things their own way, educating themselves on different ways to do things. Mm-hmm. And that makes me very proud that they are self-thinkers that way. And I encourage everybody to think about this. I think that this is such an important topic for the future. In my eyes, if we don't encourage this, I feel like there's going to come a future point where we won't have choices anymore. Yeah. Because we will be under the control of these systems that there are people out there who want to impose their systems on the rest of us. And I don't believe that we can allow that to happen. And so that needs some awareness around mm-hmm. what is happening and then some empowerment of the individual to do something about it in their own life, in their own circumstances. And I think one of the hardest things to overcome is when you feel helpless. And there's a reason that's our number one ever episode, helplessness, because people do feel like that now. And I feel like conversations like this can re-empower them and inspire them that there is a different way and it is within our control if we just look at things a little bit differently. So thank you, Daisy. I think this has been a great conversation. Any final words before we sign off?
Thank you. Yes, I think to me, it's all linked together. When I'm dependent on other people's opinion of me, that then impacts my self-worth, then I'm like a puppet and can be pulled whenever the string is pulled. But when I become more independent and I go back to Quincy Jones, fabulous musician and brilliant at his time and still great library of music, when he said, not 1 ounce of my self-worth depends on your opinion of me. And that is key. And when we then understand, okay, everyone is entitled to their opinion and what I do with it, when I become a self-controller or a self-regulator, how I'm regulating my responses to that, then it becomes more easy to be a self-thinker. So it's all intertwined. And then when I learn how I can measure who is trustworthy, then I'm good to go, ain't I? That's what I think. Thank you for bringing up this topic.
You're so welcome. I think it's been a really interesting one. We would love to know what you guys hear. You can contact us on our website using the contact page, or you can email us at ask@baldandblonde.live, or you can comment on whichever social media platform you've found us on. If you're listening to our podcast audio stream, please leave us a review. If you're watching us on video, hi, this is awesome, is it not, being able to see our faces? We welcome you to our video channels. Please share them far and wide. We want to help more people. We want to inspire change, and we want to give you these tools that we've learned over the years, especially Daisy. Thank you, as always, to our major sponsor, selfrecoding.com. We appreciate so much the support that keeps us on air. We'd love your support too. If you can afford us a cup of coffee a month, we'd be most grateful. That would be amazing. You can do that on our website as well. So that's it from us. Make sure you tune in next week for another awesome episode. And as always, share, share, share. We are Bold and Blonde.
Mindset Evolution. Talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening in to the Bold and Blonde Mindset Evolution podcast. Please share our show with your family and friends. Together, we make this world a better place for you, for us, for future generations. When you need consulting or coaching, visit selfrecoding.com. Also, please remember to rate us 5 stars and leave a review and support us at baldandblonde.live. Talk to you soon.